considered to be a totally new way of getting inflation, and that's done by shutting off gravity on sufficiently small scales. So let me start with a bit of propaganda. So as a cosmologist, one of the key lessons that I get from string theory is that the early universe cosmology should be radically different than what we expect from a standard Big Bang model. For example, you have extra dimensions that can open up at sufficiently high energies. You can have brains that start floating around. They can collide. And a lot of work has been devoted to studying how cosmology looks like with such new ingredients. Okay. Now, one common feature that these models have is the fact that gravity gets stronger at short distances. And there are two easy ways to see this. One of them is, imagine you just compactify five dimensions. You compactify one of them on the circle. You find that the gravitational force law at large distances, of course, is just 1 over r squared, as we observe. But as you go to distances between two particles much smaller than the radius of the circle, this force law becomes 1 over r cubed. Okay, so you can think of it as an effective Newton's constant, which is growing as you go to shorter distances. Another way to say this is that when you have extra dimensions or brains at sufficiently high energies, these become, you have massless moduli. And these moduli, at the level of a 4D effective theory, they mediate extra forces which are attractive. So that also contributes to a stronger effective gravity. What we want to ask, however, is what if gravity actually becomes weaker as you go to shorter distances? What if it shuts off? Okay? I'm not the first one to have contemplated this idea. There's a series of work on this. And in particular, recently, the idea of the fat gravity of Ramanujan-Sundram. Our interest is the cosmological implications of models that have weaker gravity. So in particular, if there's no gravity, can you get inflation? After all, inflation is the back reaction of vacuum energy on gravity. Do you need inflation if there is no gravity? Okay. And indeed, can you find alternative models of early universe cosmology in such a framework? So the way I'm going to shut off gravity is by modifying the graviton propagator. Okay, so I modify it by being 1 over box, the usual propagator, to some function of box and some length, some characteristic length. And this function g, so I should say box is, of course, just the covariant derivative squared. And this function g is such that it becomes trivial in the infrared, so you recover the usual force law. But it vanishes and goes to 0, if you like, at very short distances. Now, of course, you can't do this arbitrarily. And if this function were to have poles, if your propagator has extra poles, that will typically lead to ghosts and pathologies. So this function better be some analytic function. For the purpose of this talk, I'll just take it to be some exponential as such. Okay. The point is that what we find in this model with this modification of the propagator, we find new inflationary solutions that do not involve scalar fields, nor any matter for that matter. So why do I care about that? This is something that excites me because we know a lot about inflation with scalar fields. We have a notion of what simplicity is, what are the generic predictions. And if you have a totally new way of getting inflation, by the way, it's a new way in a sense that I don't know of any way to write my theory as a scalar tensor theory, as I'll show you. Okay? So I claim this is a different way of getting inflation. And it may lead to a new notion of what generic predictions mean, and hopefully distinguishing features. So let me first sketch how I get this shutoff propagator in a concrete way. So here's the action. Here's an action that does the trick. Okay? So it starts with Einstein-Hilbert term plus a term which is quadratic in curvature, involves the contraction of the Einstein tensor and the Ricci tensor, and has this funky form factor sitting in between. And if you remember this guy, this g was some exponential, so this whole term starts as box plus there are corrections of higher order in box that comes into it. You can also couple matter to this action in the normal way, just matter coupled to the metric. But for the purpose of this talk, I'm completely ignoring the matter, and I'm going to study vacuum solutions of this action. So just to show you that this leads to the weak field limit that I claim it does, let's just perturb indeed about flat space. And in this case, of course, the Ricci tensor is just given by this and some gauge. And if you substitute that back into the full action, you find indeed a quadratic action for the metric, which is basically the usual one, has the correct tensor structure for a spin 2 propagator, but with a propagator which is cut off in the UV in the way that I claim. And if you derive the equations of motion, of course now you can derive the full equations of motion with this action, it's of the form. You basically get a leading term, which is the Einstein tensor as usual, but with a form factor sitting in front of it, which is this form factor that I introduced. So you should really think, from the form of this first term, you should think of the leading term here as if indeed some effective Newton's constant, which is becoming small in the UV. Now there's a host of horrific and complicated quadratic corrections in curvature, which I didn't write down to save you the pain, but they're complicated. And the claim is I can solve these equations approximately in some approximation that I will describe, of course, assuming homogeneity, isotropy, and so forth. So just to make clear, I'm just going to study the equations of this in the cosmological context. How am I doing on time? I didn't see. Okay. And the claim is I get self-inflationary solutions. Self-inflating in the sense that there's no matter to source them. So to understand how I get these, from these horrific equations, let me give you an intuition for how that comes about. And there are two key observations to get the intuition right. Observation number one is if you were to take an ansatz, which is pure de Sitter space, okay, the Sitter space as any Einstein space is just has a Ricci tensor proportional to the metric. So if I now act with box on this Ricci tensor, I get zero, because box on the metric is zero. Which means that if I now apply the full form factor on this Ricci tensor, so my form factor, as you recall, was some exponential of box, then the only term that gives a non-vanishing contribution is the leading term in the exponential, one. So you just get back the Ricci tensor. So the lesson here is that pure de Sitter space is oblivious to this form factor, independent of how small the de Sitter radius is. However, so that's observation number one. Observation number two is if you make a slightly different ansatz, let's now consider a slowly evolving de Sitter space. So let's expand the Ricci tensor as Ricci tensor for the Sitter space plus a small correction that I call little r. So if you like, as a cosmologist, these are the sort of h squared term, and the correction is a small h dot correction, and I'm working in an approximation which is that h dot over h squared is small. So slowly evolving near the Sitter space. Now, if I consider acting with this form factor again, but now on this little correction, I have 10 left. Excellent. If I consider acting with this form factor on this h dot term, then I get a non-trivial result, because it's not pure to Sitter space, of course. And in this slowly evolving approximation, the leading term would be the form factor, but now with box replaced by the Hubble constant, which is just the characteristic timescale in the problem. And again, you'll recall this guy's an exponential, so you get some exponential of that involves h in the exponent. So I get something back which is proportional to little r, but because in the limit where h times l is large, or at least not significantly small, you get something which is much larger than little r itself. Okay, so now you have probably, this doesn't tell you anything about how I get inflation, but I'm just pointing two observations. One is that pure to Sitter is oblivious to the form factor, whereas a small deviation from it gets boosted when acted upon by this term, gets boosted by an exponential factor. And that's key in getting the answer that I want. So how do we get self-inflating solutions in this model? Well, we do what I just did. We take as an ansatz, basically, the Sitter plus a small h dot correction. That's our ansatz. We plug that into my horrific equations in the approximation that we are slowly evolving away from the Sitter. So I ignore all terms of the form h double dot, h dot squared, h triple dot, and so forth. So it's, if you like, it's a controlled expansion being close to the Sitter space. The equation of the motion nicely reduced to something very simple, which is just this equation here. And you can see the structure I was describing earlier. You have a leading term, which if you like, quote unquote, the pure de Sitter term, is unaffected by any form factor. The leading h dot term, however, just as I described in the previous transparency, gets boosted by a exponential term, which involves h and l in this combination. So, the solution of the equations of motion is therefore that this h dot over h squared is proportional to this form factor, which is small in the limit, again, that the Hubble radius is small compared to the scale of new physics. Excuse me? Yes, that's right, which means that the Sitter radius is much smaller or smaller than the, is that your question? No, well, I'm saying the Hubble radius, not the Hubble constant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Hubble rate is large compared to the energy scale. Okay. So now you have to worry, how do we reheat? What kind of density perturbations do you get? And so forth. So now we get to the phenomenology of the model. Now reheating, the equation that I showed you, this one, has h dot over h squared negative. So eventually, you will get to a stage where h dot over h squared will get to become of order unity. And that means that your accelerating solution stops. And you reheat through a process that was discussed some years ago, which is just gravitational particle production. So there's no inflaton in this model that couples directly the standard model degrees of freedom to excite them. So the only way you can reheat is through gravity. And that's a much more inefficient process, of course, so the reheat temperature that you get is lower than you would get in typical inflationary models. It's a reheat temperature that's given by the Hubble constant during inflation. And again, which in our case is of the order of the scale of new physics. So the constraint that you, the nucleosynthesis constraint that you must reheat to a sufficiently high temperature gives you some rough bound on how small the scale of new physics ought to be. Okay, so now we move on to density perturbations. And I can only sketch the results because I have limited time, so I'll just describe in some words what the answers are. So normally in inflation, it's fluctuations in the inflaton, quantum fluctuations in the inflaton that get stretched out and amplified and turn into density perturbations. Here there's no inflaton, but the equations of motion for gravity are modified, and if you study them carefully, what you find is that what plays the role of the inflaton, in some sense, is the Newtonian potential itself. So if you like, the Newtonian potential satisfies some kind of slow roll condition. And so it's directly the fluctuations in the Newtonian potential which turn themselves into curvature perturbations. The fact that it's the Newtonian potential and not the inflaton makes a difference in the answer. What you find is a delta rho over rho, which is H over epsilon. So here, let me make clear what I'm saying. Epsilon, it's not the usual slow roll parameter in this case. It's just given by H dot over H squared. It's a general definition of what slow roll means. In the case of, if this were inflation, then epsilon would reduce to the epsilon you know and love. So parametrically, this is a different delta rho over rho for the perturbations. Being H over epsilon, it's different than what you have in scalar-driven inflation, where it's typically, where it is H over epsilon to the 1/2. So it's a different answer. And now fixing the delta rho over rho to have the right amplitude to match observations, amplitude of 10 to the minus 5, you find that this determines for you the scale of new physics, which turns out to be 10 to the 9 GeV in this model, for the specific choice of a form factor that I was discussing. That's 10 to the minus 22 centimeters. The spectral tilt, okay, so deviations from scale invariance, turns out to be, in this case, some combination of such involving epsilon. And if you plug in the numbers, you get a spectral index of 0.95. And you're not surprised that I get 0.95, because that's a Poe's diction of what the data says. That's what theorists do. And there is no significant running, okay? Now we move on to gravity waves, which is where all the fun is. Okay, so gravity waves turns out that are a bit problematic. So here, the long wavelength mode of the graviton, of the tensor mode, actually grows as some power of the scale factor, a to the 2/3. Whereas in inflation, this guy is a constant at long wavelength. Okay, so there's a difference in how this tensor mode behaves. This gives you an answer for the power spectrum of gravity waves, which is given by this. So it's a usual answer from inflation, which is this term, times a term which is very red. Okay, so there's a lot more power on large scales in this model in gravity waves. That makes the model a little bit contrived. I forgot to tell you this model is particularly ruled out. But there's room to play. So let me be actually honest. And so at the moment, in this particular model, the gravity wave spectrum is quite red compared to what you would get in inflation. And that's interesting, because that's potentially something you could distinguish it if it wasn't ruled out. So in this particular case, if I fix the scalar amplitude to be 10 to the minus 5, indeed I have too much gravity waves. But that's OK. We shouldn't throw the towel just yet, because the first few inflationary models with scalar fields, anyhow, had too large scalar perturbation amplitude. So what to do is, well, we can play with perhaps more general choice for this form factor, which shuts off gravity. And then the question would be, would this more red spectrum than what you'd expect still survive while giving you observationally acceptable predictions? And another, in my opinion, more interesting question is, can you actually turn things around and get a blue spectrum of gravity waves out of this? This is something that inflation cannot get. Okay, inflation rigorously predicts a red spectrum of gravity waves, slight red spectrum, and it'd be interesting to see if I can get very different predictions out of this. So thank you very much.